I'm Andrew Finney, and welcome to Series 4 of the Nurse Researcher Podcast, a podcast aimed at being able to sort of dig deep into the lives of nurse researchers at all levels. This new series will be the PhD student series, and we're really looking forward to being able to hear back from and listen to people that have just completed a PhD or are currently undertaking a PhD. So listen in and enjoy. Hello and welcome to our new series of the Nurse Researcher Podcast, our PhD student series. And when I always say I'm delighted to see a guest, I really am delighted to have the lovely Paula Berridge with us. And I'll give her the brief introduction of the community nurse, consultant nurse for a virtual ward. She's based at Rotherham NHS Foundation Trust and somebody that I've been engaging with for research for a number of years now. So Paula, delighted to have you on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me on the podcast, Andrew. It's a pleasure.
Well, this is a new series, and really, I think this is probably the one that will hit home the most, because we'll have a lot of people out there who are fighting the fight and trying to do a PhD alongside other roles and senior roles in nursing. And I know that you've been doing that. And credit to you, when you've been on meetings with me over the last few years, you've been sitting in your car talking to me, so I know how dedicated you are to these roles and engaging with research as well.
Absolutely. I nearly sat in my car for this meeting today just to follow the tradition.
I think there's a series there. Podcast with nurses in cars, perhaps something like that. Perhaps we'll get it on Netflix. But yeah. With you, I know you're an avid listener to the podcast as well, so you know what's coming. I have to take you back to how did you become a nurse in the first place?
Absolutely. And this is always my favourite part of the podcast that I've listened to. And it's lovely to hear people's individual stories. So for me, and again, this always sounds like it's something very similar to everybody else. So it was either a teaching pathway or a nursing pathway for me, because I always wanted to work with children. So I never even envisaged working with like adults and geriatrics, and here I am looking after a frailty virtual ward. So I was advised to do general nursing rather than children's nursing when I chose that as my pathway. And I never looked back. I absolutely loved it. I had a couple of placements, and then I had a community placement whilst I was in my first year. And I did my training in Manchester, but I ended up coming back to Rotherham for a placement in the community, and it was the best thing ever. And I just knew then that were my pathway choice. And I kind of then tailored my nursing studentship, for a better word, to actually cover more community areas. And it was just absolute. I just loved it. I loved that autonomy. I loved visiting people in their own home. I loved seeing how people lived, and that for me was where I wanted to be, and I have ever since.
Yeah, you stayed there since. I suspect we're around the same age, and you did a diploma like I did.
Yep.
There wasn't a heavy feature for research there, was there at all? So I'm guessing that didn't touch you at that time.
No, and it feels like such a long time ago, but at the same time, it feels like it was yesterday. So yeah, I went to Manchester to do a diploma in professional nursing studies, and it was a bursary awarded program, which meant I left home at 19 and took myself off to Manchester. It weren't heavily featured. It was quite an equal theory versus practical placement, but not really a lot of research. I mean, the assignments that we did, we had to look for the information regarding that. But it weren't heavily featured in that initial part of it, and never really in the first like parts of my preceptorship either. It didn't really feature in that.
Did you feel like you were academic, or did you feel like you were out your depth? How did you feel when you started doing, because it I know you did like me, you did not so much a top-up degree, but you topped up to degree. Did you feel like you were somebody that could write assignments? Did you feel like somebody that was wanted to delve into evidence, or did it feel like something you had to do to just carry on clinically and advance clinically?
No, I think for me, so the career pathway in the community, obviously, if you want to like progress in the career in community, it was in that time to do the district nursing degree. And that was the, like that's I knew that that was the pathway that I wanted to choose. So it wasn't an option to not do that. That was something that I needed to do. And it was quite a heavy course, like running two modules at a time. So again, there was elements of research in it, and it wasn't until the end of that degree program that we did an evidence-based practice module. That then focus heavily on you need to understand the methodologies, the sampling, the population, and things like that. It wasn't until that point that I really started to have a better understanding of what research entailed in nursing practice.
Yeah. And I suppose the value of the degree in your own pathway is that when you are delving for evidence and you're looking for research and you're looking for papers, they're meaningful, aren't they? Because they're around what you're doing. If you do a generic degree as a nurse, it's a little bit like I'm leaning into somebody else's pathway here, but actually it probably whet your appetite for research because you were digging into your own specialism.
Yeah, and I think that's what that part was all about. It was understanding. So when we first started the degree program, it was looking at why would you caseload profile, and why would you need to look at your caseload? Why would you need to understand your population that you're looking after? And that was kind of the start of, well, yeah, why do we need to understand that? Why do we need to look at what the demographics are of the area and the population that you serve? And that kind of got me then into thinking about when I qualified the area that I looked after, where we live, it's quite it has quite big pockets of social deprivation, and it was understanding as I moved around job roles, what my area was like and what the people needed in that area for us to care for them safely.
Yeah. And you didn't necessarily then jump into research straight away. You did sort of advanced practice as a master's, didn't you? And you did teaching. So you went down the educational route a little bit as well.
Yeah, so again, wanting to advance in community nursing, the natural pathway after doing my district nursing degree was to do my teaching degree, looking at obviously as a district nursing student, you need to have a practice teacher. And again, all them pathways have changed now, but at the time when I was doing it was a level 7 master's postgrad certificate in education, and that's the pathway that I went for that. And again, that was looking at your learning styles, what I needed to adapt to mentor a student, not just a pre-reg student, but a post grad student who was doing a degree that I'd completed. So it gave me that sense of I didn't know it at the time, but that was my pathway into then being a clinical academic, because I was doing both parts of that. So I was doing a master's degree, and then I was doing my community side of it, where I was supporting education in practice. And for me, that was where it really started to develop that understanding and that enthusiasm for, well, why do we do that, and why are we teaching like that, and how can we progress that, and how can we make our workforce and our nurses and community better, and how can we build that enthusiasm to take that forward? So that was quite a big light bulb
Yeah.
moment for me in that.
But you get to the end of an advanced practice program, you have a master's degree, you're the top of your game, you're a consultant nurse, You're successfully evaluating things like the virtual ward that you work on. You're probably a bit sick of academia by that point. You've probably cleared the books off the dining room table and I'm never going into them again. And then within a few months, you've registered yourself on a PhD. How did that happen?
I know, what's that all about? I didn't even speak to my husband about that until after I'd applied. I think he thought I were absolutely bonkers at the time. So I remember handing in my dissertation for my master's, like with 3 minutes to spare. It was the 19th of December. We got Christmas stresses and work was busy, and I was like, I'm never doing anything ever again. Leave me be. I'm happy in this. I was a community matron at the time. I'm happy in this role. What a wonderful opportunity I've had. I've completed my master's, and yeah, I'm not doing anything again. And then I got my results in January, and by April, I was like, no, I've got this question in my head, and I need to get it out of my head and onto paper. And I'd spoken to my supervisor from my dissertation, and with the idea, and he's like, yeah, I'll pop you in touch with Robin, who is my current supervisor for my PhD. And that was it. The discussion started, and by the year after, in February, I'd started my part-time PhD.
There we go. Paul, I'm going to slightly interrupt our interview, and I don't mind the listener hearing this. I'm going to ask you to unplug your headphones, and we're going to try without because I'm getting a little bit of interference.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
So let's have a go. Let's see if we can hear you now, okay?
Can you hear me now?
We've got you. That's better. A little bit more echoey now, but that's far clearer. I was getting a little bit of interference. And rather than edit this, the listener needs to know that this is how it works. You're in your clinical area. I'm in mine. That's absolutely fine. That's a lot clearer. There's just a little bit. It sounded like a computer game loading for those of us old enough to remember back to the 80s. So yeah. So I
Dial
thought, I'll remove that little bit.
up.
So
Okay.
you're just on the back of a master's degree. You haven't given yourself much of a break. You've got a question in your mind, can probably lean towards a PhD, but you haven't had a real research training at that point. You've had a bit of an academic climb, haven't you? You haven't had a real research training, and I know that is what a PhD is. What made you ready, and who supported you, and how did it get funded? I'll put that all back to you as one question, really.
So I didn't really know if I was ready or not. I actually, it was the starting of the pandemic, and prior to completing my master's, I'd actually taken out the chief operating officer from our organisation, and talked to him about my dissertation and the findings, and that I could look at then something that might then be a PhD worthy like program. And he said, come back to me when you've completed it and tell me your findings. Anyway, so it was just the starting of the pandemic. I'd summarized on a beautiful PowerPoint, and my head of nursing actually supported my request, and I went to see the chief operating officer for the organization and just said, this is my findings, would you support the funding? So I didn't even get to give him my PowerPoint presentation, and he just said, yeah, I agree to 3 years funding. They were aware that it could take up 7 years. I was doing it part-time. So my tuition was paid for 3 years. And now it's part of my job description and part of my role. I have had my final year funded as well, which is incredible. But at the time, I didn't know about NIHR grants. I didn't know about funding streams or secondments or scholarships. So I wanted to do it. So I went and found a way and means of support from the organisation. So yeah, and I'm doing it part time. I've got a full time job. A very busy job as a nurse consultant, but the pleasure, weirdly, that I'm getting out of doing the PhD, even though it's so stressful trying to fit it all in, I just know that the work that I'm doing is going to be worthwhile.
Yeah. It's so meaningful to the patients you support and what you do. So you got the launch pad really of your masters that's encouraged people and allowed people to say, yeah, we'll fund you to do that. Do you have any time allocated in your working week to do the PhD?
I do now, but only very recently. So when I first started, I actually reduced my working hours. So I took a pay cut in all wants and purposes of the words. I took a pay cut to complete it. So I had a day a week, where it was officially my day off, but that was my PhD day. And then I try and do bits when I'm not at work and in between family life and looking after two dogs and husband and two kids. So yeah, it's hectic, but I don't think I've ever not led a hectic lifestyle since I qualified. So if I sit down at night and just sit and do nothing, it makes me feel uneasy.
I think Ruth Endicott, if she listens to this podcast, would probably have her head in her hands now at the thought that you'd been doing this in your day off. And how you've needed to do it because the pathways are there, aren't they? But you don't know what you don't know. And that's the difficulty, I think, for people. I sort of tried to describe myself as an academic clinician recently, not a clinical academic, in the sense that I know what you do clinically, but also I don't do it. But what I do know is a lot that's going on academically. And when you're a clinical academic or an aspiring one, you often don't know what's going on outside of your trust or the NHS. And you don't know about these pathways, and somebody needs to be a little bit of a boundary spanner across the two, don't they? And that's what I've tried to be in my senior research leader role to bring the academic understanding to people who are in clinical practice. It's very difficult. You've done it the hard way. Tell us a little bit about the PhD. If you had to do a 1 minute thesis, and I'm not putting you on the spot, but tell us what you're doing in the PhD.
So my PhD is exploring healthcare professional perceptions of how we manage multimorbid patients who are in the community. So it's a community and primary care based study, and I've explored, well, I've interviewed people from across South Yorkshire to see what models, frameworks, strategies, what our understanding is of case management, and how we basically look after these very vulnerable patients. Yeah, and it's been really insightful. I've really enjoyed the field work and the interviews. It's been really insightful. So I've interviewed from band fours up to consultants. So the knowledge and the theoretical understanding of people's understanding of case management has been really varied.
And this is going to be a question I'm going to ask everybody in this series, but was there a crossroads moment? Because it gets difficult with a PhD. Was there a crossroads moment? Sometimes it might be the progression point where you thought, do I carry on with this? Is it too much? Have you had self-doubt? Have you had thoughts about whether you could continue?
Absolutely, all the way through. But I'm the type of person that has got the tenacity and the grit and the determination to not pass that up. So my progression point, I'd literally just started as a consultant nurse. We were just setting up the service. It was really tricky time, and the chairperson of my viva for progression basically said, "I think you should step off for 6 months, because I think your mind's not in the PhD at the minute. It's in trying to set up a service, rightly so." And I just said, "Absolutely not. I'm not doing that. I don't want to step off. I'd rather put extra hours in and work through this progression point." But there was just no way I was going to step off it, because I know I probably wouldn't have stepped back on, and for me that weren't ever an option. I'm not gonna lie, it's been quite lonely initially. And then, so through yourself and Eleanor, I presented at the first evidence-based conference that we ran through the Community of Practice Group for Clinical Academics, and I met the lovely Sarah Ellison, who we've like had a serendipitous career pathway where we've both done quite similar things. And we stepped onto PhD although she's at Liverpool doing hers and I'm obviously in Sheffield doing mine, it's like we've ran side by side, and the support that we've given each other has been I can't think of the word. It's just been like phenomenal. I couldn't have done it without having Sarah for me to ring, and vice versa, and whinge and moan to, and share progression and share knowledge and understanding, and the good parts of it as well. So, and having the social like gathering of people who are like-minded. So meeting Eleanor, meeting yourself, and networking has been like a real. It's just been incredible. I don't think I'd have been able to
It's a support
continue
network,
without.
isn't it? It's a support network of people that
Absolutely.
you can, and I did a lot of this in my PhD. There's a lot of moaning to one another.
Yeah.
And it's important, I think, to share with listeners and people that are on the journey that we all get a bit filled with self-doubt with this. It's part of the nature of being a nurse a little bit, I think. I think we weren't naturally put on the academic pedestal. So we always feel like we're punching up a little
Yeah.
bit. And I think it's important for people to hear that, but I've seen your journey, and really enjoyed listening to what you've been doing. You came to a second conference that I led 18 months ago, and won one of the oral presentation prizes. We're
Yeah,
quite you and your partner in disguise there were quite entertaining, and that so
Chuckle Brothers.
you can name
Yeah.
her.
Vicky, me and Vicky, yeah. Me and Vicky are like a dynamic duo. And I think because we both share the same passion for the role and for keeping people at home, and we've got the same work ethic, and Vicky's doing a prof doc at Keele, and again supported through yourself, Andrew, and using them connections that we've made, and yeah, I think she's again finding the journey not hard but quite stressful, and I think it's lovely for me to have been in this position where I can now support Vicky through her journey and other people who, and encouraging other people to do it, because nursing research and community nursing in particular, it's not frowned upon, but there's never enough time and effort and money spent into it. And I think having myself go through this pathway and Vicky as well in our organisation, like for me, that's putting our organisation on the map and saying, look what our nurses are doing in the community. They're not only like going and finding this clinical academic pathway, but they're then looking for other ways to building research to make things better for the population. Yeah.
And the pathway is there to some extent for nursing and research. It's been hard in community settings. I mean, I think the QNI has been a real asset now for research. I think Ben Bowers has changed the way Dr. Ben Bowers has changed the way that I think research is viewed in community settings because he champions it. And
Yeah.
you've got Professor Julie Green, you know, the sort of first professor of district nursing. So there are trailblazers out there, but you have to see yourself as one
Yeah.
as
And I
well.
think like for me, being like when I was looking for nurse consultant roles, when I started my PhD, and I was like, well, why haven't we got nurse consultant roles in the community? Why do they have to be a specialist in a specialist field? So yeah, we've got a respiratory nurse consultant who is excellent, and the knowledge that she has is incredible. But why can't we have generic nurse consultants? So my speciality and my expertise is community nursing, is multimorbidities, is looking after them patients, and same for Vicky. Her expertise is frailty and falls and that like side of the age group that we're looking after, and we both, and unbeknownst to each other, we were both championing these different aspects of the role, and then the opportunity arose within the virtual wards, like setting up of the virtual ward in our area, and we were lucky enough to have been given that opportunity to take that baton and run with it. And for me, it's been an incredible opportunity. And now we're able to then showcase that in the research that we're doing and across the organization. And I'm not going to be shy in saying this, but we've just been shortlisted for a HSJ award for the work that we've done, not just me and Vicky, but our team. And that's just like we would never thought we'd be doing that at this stage in like 2 years into doing virtual ward, and that's the incredible work that the team has put in to be able to get that.
Perfect. And PhD, where are you now? What's left? How long? When are you submitting? Those are the pressure questions.
I can't wait. So I finished my field work. I am on my analysis. I've read, reread, triple read the transcripts and started on my coding. So I've got my initial themes and I'm on the write up, and this is the exciting part. So like it's just getting it all down on paper now, getting that analysis down. I'm hoping to publish my literature review in the next couple of months, and then hopefully publish some findings prior to submission. So I'm there. The end is in sight, and I can't begin to tell you the relief that the end is in sight, and that has made all the hard work definitely worth it.
Now,
Not going to say it's not going to be hard in the next
I'm not
couple
your
of months.
supervisor, I'm not your examiner, but I'm going to pin you down a little bit. When do you want that submitted? When do you want it in?
Ideally, like this time next year.
Okay. You've got time there.
I was aiming for February, but I think that's a bit of a tight time scale.
Yeah.
So I'll say summer next year, and
That's a
that's
good
really
timeline. That's a good
exciting.
timeline. You can work backwards from that to some extent and think, right, what are the little time points now? What are the things I need to do?
So in the next couple of days, I'm gonna write myself a little Gantt chart to say, right, I want this part done by. So at the minute, I'm sending chapters to my supervisor. He's editing and looking at, and then I've started on my methodology chapter this week. So I think that'll be a pretty straightforward chapter to be able to complete in
And
a
the
few
listener
weeks.
doesn't know this, but you are saying all of this with a smile on your face. So that's a good
I
sign that you're saying these things with a smile. Mind you, I've never seen you not have a smile on your face. So I suppose that lends itself to the obvious answer to the next question. No regrets? You wouldn't do anything differently?
No, absolutely no regrets. And I think the journey that I've taken to get here, like every part of that journey has taught me a lesson in life, in workplace, in everything that I've been through. And I think I wouldn't be where I am today without them lessons that I've been through. And maybe I would have looked at funding for a PhD and maybe gone down the funded route. But I think doing it the way I've done it has not only showed that the passion for what I wanted to do, but it's shown that there's some tenacity behind my personality to be able to say, actually, I'm not following the traditional route. I'm following my own pathway. And if I can support people down any route that they want to go down, I'll be 100% behind them on the decision, because I'm here, and I'm going to be maybe the first one in the community to have in our organisation definitely to have completed a PhD and got a nurse consultant role on the strength of that, and that's something that I can be proud of, and show people that community is not just a one career pathway. There's lots of different routes, and who'd have thought 20 years ago that you'd have nurse consultants in a community setting? So my aim would be to like encourage more people to do that and to look at people. Sorry, I did turn my Teams off, but it keeps sending notifications through for some reason.
It's all right. Don't worry. Don't worry. That's absolutely fine. We're in work
But yeah,
settings.
I know. I did. Yeah, I just think if we can get more people to choose career pathways in the community and open up them career pathways so that you're saying, well, you don't have to just be a district nursing sister and do that district nursing degree. There's lots of different ways that you can progress clinically or academically, and it's how we can support that as an organisation, I think, is what we need to concentrate on next.
And postdoc, are you, is that your plan to be the clinical academic that's going for postdoctoral awards at some point and continuing? I tend to think, you talked about Vicky, I tend to think a PhD is meant to make you a professional researcher, and a prof doc is probably meant to make you a research professional. So there's more of a sense that with the PhD, there's the expectation that you'll be pushing that postdoctoral route. I'd never say never, but I don't think you would anyway.
No, I never say never, and I think the findings that I'm seeing from my research, there's definitely a prof doc fellowship application pending
A
to continue
postdoc, a
that.
postdoc, not a prof doc. You're not doing one of those.
A postdoc, sorry, a postdoctorate fellowship. Yeah, definitely. I think there's definitely something there out of the findings to take something forward.
Okay, my last question of this series for every person is, what advice would you give to people in nursing roles, nursing midwifery, AHP roles, who think they're in busy clinical settings where they're at the top of their game, probably clinically, and they don't know how to step on the ladder? What would you say to them?
I say look at what's available out there, look for networking, look for people like yourselves who definitely champion that role. For me, it's looking what's in your organisation, looking what's outside your organisation, and if there's a pathway to follow, don't be shy. Please don't be shy in following that pathway. It's not easy. It's not an easy thing to decide to do, but it's completely worth it. Completely worth it.
We'll be awaiting the news when it's Dr. Paula Berridge. So, but for now, I shall
Absolutely.
say, Paula Berridge, thank you for your time. What a lovely episode. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Andrew.
No problem whatsoever. Hello, and welcome back to the Nurse Researcher Podcast. And I always say I'm delighted, but this time I'm delighted to have Eleanor back as I was summarizing her. So Eleanor, welcome back to the podcast in your old guise.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
After
It's been a
the
while.
well, we had you as guest, which was delightful. And
Yes.
I can say at the time of recording, we still haven't had your PhD yet, but we will had your Viva by the time this goes out. So we'll
You
keep
certainly
people
will.
posted. We'll certainly keep people posted. And what I can say is that you're looking good fettle, despite the fact you've got an oncoming Viva.
I'm hiding it well.
Hiding it well, yeah, that must be what you're looking to do. But here we are. We are back to a new series. I think this one's really important for people to hear the PhD story. You know, with you were just bringing it to a close. We're going to have people like Paula that are some way through, and we're going to have people perhaps that have just completed. And I think people need to know the warts and all of PhDs as nurse researchers. So I'm really looking forward to this series. And there's nobody I was more delighted to have on than Paula Berridge, because gosh, I've seen a lot over the last few years, and she's perhaps the most resilient person I've ever met. And that's perhaps the theme for this summary. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, she really has lived her quote of saying she's carved her own path. I mean, she's had to work incredibly hard by the sounds of things and faced a number of obstacles. And her research area that she spoke about, that she's focusing on, managing multi-morbid patients in the communities, is such an important area at the moment with the NHS 10-year health plan, with the shift from care from the hospital to the community. And I was like, wow, Paula, this is an incredibly important area that her organization clearly values the research in, yet she is having to work extremely hard to manage a full-time job and do her PhD on top of that. And so, when she says she's got grit and tenacity, I think she's got that times 10, because I think what she's doing must be extremely difficult. But she's doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll going back to the starch. I mean, she reminds me a little bit of what we talked about, the way that we came through with diplomas and degrees, and the way that you have to build up your progress a little bit. So she's trodden the boards. You know, she's done very well clinically, got herself to that consultant nurse post. The sense that she is now championing virtual ward, like you say, is a time now where we're talking about neighborhood care and care in the community settings. But what hasn't really advanced with the speed that we want it to is research roles for nurses and nurses or midwives or HPs in community and primary care settings. And I think it's some that was somewhat reflected in what she was telling us.
Yeah, I would say so. I think, they're getting a lot for their money out of Paula. I think doing, I mean, she's got this fantastic background in teaching. She's at, she's a consultant, community nurse, and she's doing her PhD. I mean, that is a huge role, really, to combine without the, without the fellowship support that you might get from the NIHR, which provides you with that protected time to do training, go to conferences, all these other things as well. She's kind of having to create that opportunity on her own, which I think must be hard, but she's so incredibly determined. I'm sure she'll do it. And I think, you've got to admire her for, wanting to find a way to make it work. And she certainly, she certainly is doing that. And I think, when she spoke about, I think you asked her what the future might be after the PhD, which sometimes when you're in the midst of that really difficult write-up stage, it's quite difficult. It's like, right, I'll just think about that a little bit later on. And I think she's in such a strong position in terms of research for the future, but it is, well, how is that path going to shape up to support her in the future so she can conduct that research as well as the clinical aspects of her role? And that's the bit in nursing, I think, that isn't quite there yet. Those opportunities are really limited, aren't they, to be able to have both of those roles and be recognized for it as well.
She's incredibly grateful to have been given PhD funds. And again, all credit to Paula for seeing it that way, because and I think her employer will be thinking to themselves, you know, we've paid your PhD fees, we've done this, we've invested in you. But when I said Ruth Endicott will be sitting listening to this with head and hands, I wasn't kidding, because we're 15, 16 years into the NIHR pathways now. And whether people at the time thought Paula might not be a strong candidate for a DCAF or a doctoral fellowship, I think she would have been. And I think there were easier ways of doing this. So I think if you're an employer and times are tight and you've continued to fund her PhD fees, then that's great. But actually, she's going above and beyond to complete this PhD to improve
Yeah,
the
she
care
really
of the
is.
patients. And I would be pushing all nurses that are listening to this to try and get some form of funded PhD, whether that be a studentship, but hopefully a fellowship, something that backfills your salary. You shouldn't have to drop down a role or a day, and we'll get onto that, dropping down a day, but you shouldn't have to be doing a great deal of this in your own time. PhDs stretch the working week anyway. And you and I were both, we could say fortunate enough, but I would be a hypocrite doing that. I'd say we were skilled enough to get fellowships that gave us a salary, our salary to do a PhD. That's not a big ask. That is what people should be doing. If you're the right person, the right candidate for that PhD, that's what you should do. You shouldn't have to step back to then step up again. Sorry, I'm on the soapbox with this one.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I have had only that experience of having that protected time to be able to concentrate 4 days a week on my PhD. And I can't quite imagine how challenging it must be to be doing that on top of, a stressful job as well. And it's those opportunities to do the training as well, isn't it? I mean, Paula said that she really enjoyed doing the field work and the interviews. And I could almost picture her doing this. She has really great rapport with individuals. And those are some of the skills that I think set nurses perhaps aside. That are really beneficial if you're putting in an application for a fellowship. Those you can draw on those. That puts you in a really strong position because doing interviews with individuals, there's a significant amount of trust, isn't there, and rapport building. To be able to, kind of extract that information and have those conversations, those really in-depth conversations. But, doing that, she's kind of doing that on her own, isn't she? Teaching herself her way through that. Which is incredible. And it's, I think she's obviously really enjoyed that side of things. I did too. And I'm sure she's going to have some incredibly interesting findings to share as well. And I'm going to be really excited to read about those. But I mean, her work really aligns with the NIHR priorities, especially if you look at aging as well in terms of multi-morbid patients. I mean, it would be great, if she could be supported after this to channel that into a fellowship where she gets access to the additional training and funding that she would need to develop a whole program of research.
Yeah, she isn't going to be short of opportunity. It's that position to she's going to have to feel confident enough and feel she has the skill set to move into the postdoctoral world, and she's going to need a team with that. I think when you're isolated, you work in isolation in the community, I sense she's got two supervisors she really appreciates and have been supportive of her. She's got critical friends to help her with the clinical work. But that alignment to the university, whether that be Sheffield or somewhere else, really need to support her to write that postdoctoral grant that emphasizes the training that you need, because she won't have had the research training opportunities that you and I got by having to not self-fund, but having to sort of like just like work through a PhD with just one hand on the clinical work, or we can then fit in the academic side of things.
Yeah, it's a real challenge, isn't it? And I think you mentioned as well, and Paul is trailblazing for community nurses that might be considering doing research as well. It's pretty rare, isn't it, for nurses in the community to be doing what Paula is doing. And you mentioned Dr. Ben Bowers as well, being a champion and a trailblazer. But she too, and I'm sure maybe when she looks around, I can understand she said it can be quite lonely, and it generally as a nurse, it's there are fewer nurses that are, clinical academics or academics, aren't there? And to be in the community setting as well, to be able to share those times when probably things are really tough at work, and then you've got to go home and do your PhD literature review as well on top of having a family. I mean, yeah, you
She
need that
what she
network.
isn't at the minute is she isn't a clinical academic, because she is a clinician and an academic. And a
Yes,
clinical academic has to sort of combine the two into one role. And at the minute, she's having to do two separate
two.
roles.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's
That's
not the
right.
way forward. We
Yeah.
talk about people not doing a 3 day, 2 day type of thing where you do your clinical work, then you do your academic work. We want them to bleed into one another. She's probably doing a 5 day, 2 day, 5 days of
Yeah.
clinical work and 2 days taking weekends and perhaps evenings to do the PhD. And
Yeah.
it's not the right way. It's not, I would never advocate it, but what I will do is just champion and celebrate Paula's resilience with this. And probably at the start of the PhD, the ignorance that she talks about, really, I think now the NIHR are reaching out to people a lot more. Underrepresented disciplines and a focus on nurses and allied health professions and taking the message out and giving pre-docs and pre-application awards. It's hard, certainly when Paula started, and it was incredibly hard when I got mine, to go from not having other real sort of awards to being competitive enough to get a PhD at the first go, to get your PhD fellowship. There wasn't really the other rungs of the ladder to get you there, to have real strong candidacy. And I think, whether she started this 4 or 5 years ago, to stick with it. And now what she's emphasized really to us is they've given her a day, but I don't think they have given her a day. I think how I read into it when I listened back again, she's cut a day of her working week to finish this PhD and get it over the line, which is terrible that she has to do that. But I think that she feels it'll be worth it in the end. And I truly hope it is, because I think she could have a strong clinical academic future.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you touched on something that I think historically as nurses, we're not used to having those opportunities and being given perhaps what seems like tuition fees covered and things like that. So you're almost like exceptionally, of course, grateful for those opportunities and for that funding to be paid for. But actually, is it on par with other disciplines and, other professions that perhaps would have different expectations that would be, well, that is part and parcel of the clinical academic role, not in addition to, having to work a double role. And so I think there's something about, we're just sometimes you have to fight for training opportunities as a nurse, don't you? And I'm sure maybe other disciplines, perhaps they do feel the same as well. So that there's something I think that still probably needs to improve around that, if I can say that.
Well, I think community trusts, ICBs, are not looking at this in the depth with the depth of inquiry that we are. Somebody applies for some funds to do something academic. There's the funds. There's no sense of when are you doing it and what time do you need. And a PhD is at the very pinnacle of this, to the point where it needs a network of people. It needs support. It needs time, real thinking time to do a PhD well. As well as time to do the field work, as she calls it, and the write up and trying to get your publications out of that. It needs a lot of time. You need a lot of headspace. And finding headspace when you've got a full-time job 5 days a week, I don't know how she's done it. So my final words, and I know she's got a little bit of time left yet to complete, is just well done. Well done you to Paula, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really hope that, the findings from her PhD research, the organization supports to, whether they're recommendations or something is going to be implemented afterwards to make improvements around the management of multimorbid patients, because I'm sure she's got some very rich data and some expertise around, what might work for particular populations, which you don't want to lose, do you? You want to see that actually turn into some action. So hopefully they'll be valuing those findings once she's finished her PhD
Well,
and
I don't think there's anybody more charismatic in that area to deliver those findings. She's a born knowledge mobilizer, isn't she? You can imagine that the way that she can share things with patients and professionals. She could do a wonderful job. So I think she'll be a real advocate for community nursing, and I hope she goes on to sort of be successful with the PhD
I
firstly,
have a
and then
feeling she will, won't she? I mean, she doing a master's wasn't quite enough. I think she felt, she said at the time, she felt like, I think a lot of people go through that, don't they? They feel like, I can't do this again. And then suddenly a few weeks later, you're like, okay, rejuvenated, let's move on to the next thing. And it's that intellectual stimulation, it's that extra aspect that you get, I think, and satisfaction from doing the research once you maybe, you get the research bug, I think, don't you?
And then I'll leave my final word for the poor husband, who wasn't even informed that she was starting a PhD, and I'm guessing has had no say in it. He just puts up with it,
Probably always the way,
and supports her through. So all credit to hubby as well, I think, who's clearly been a strong support when he thought she was done at Masters,
you need it,
and
don't you?
then she steps straight onto the PhD.
It's amazing what she's done, carved her own pathway.
We wish her luck, and I think that's probably enough for this episode.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew.
No worries. And I'll say on behalf of myself and the listeners, good luck with yours. Good luck with that viva. It's not far away. And
Thank you.
we should, by the time we do another episode, we should know the outcome.
Yes, absolutely.
So
Thank you.
thanks for your time, Alan. Much appreciated.
Thanks. Take care.